Oh, I did notice actually. Well, I didn't notice that. I thought to myself, yeah. Oh, I didn't notice one here. And well, I think, you know, mixed blessing they are.
I haven't got a washing machine.
You don't have a washing machine? Do you hand wash your clothes?
No, not
the laundrette. The laundrette down there. Do you go down to the one here at the bottom of the
road? Down the bottom of the road. I go in there. When I pick it up, as I open it, you know, the old blue bag, my underclothes in that corner, my socks will be there, my shirts are that side, the towels underneath.
It's fine.
I've been doing it so many years now.
Yeah, great. Well, that's a good way to do it. I used them to do some drying the other, not so long ago, and they were more than happy to let me use their big tumble dryers, which were great. Really good.
I can cope with that.
That's good. This sounds good.
Yeah. So this is now recording. So now what we can do, I mean, essentially, let's just try and forget it's there.
So
why don't you just, as I say, try and start by reminding us of who you are, and then, yeah, just tell us about your early days.
Okay, right. So, well, hello everybody. I am a long, long resident of Brockley, South East London, which at one time was a little village. Changed a lot over the years, mind you, but it's been my home for 90 years. I was born in Peckham, St Mary's Road, and that would be on July the 28th, 1926. 6 months later, I moved to Wickham Road, Brockley, and moved into number 49 Wickham Road with my parents, my elder sister, and we lived there. In the early months, January, February of 1927, a nanny from an agency who my mother had employed at short notice put me out in the garden in my pram on a January, February day, very cold, and left me there all day. When they come to get me in, I was obviously suffering from, some sort of cold illness. They rushed me to St John's Hospital in Lewisham, which was a children's hospital. I stayed there for one whole year. They said I had congestion of the lungs, which I think was a polite way of calling tuberculosis. If you look at my back now, there are 5 holes in my back, right across at the top of my back, where the tubes were there to draw off the fluid. They told my mother and father that my chance of coming out was quite small. But they said roughly what they often hear nowadays. He's a fighter. He'll do it. And the end of the year, I came home, and we lived in a very happy home at 49 Wickham Road. We had a maid, a nanny, and a cook, and they lived in the upper floors. We had a gardener, char lady, and everything else that goes with a good standard living. My parents entertained a lot. Christmas time, we sat down 25 people at one table. It's the sort of table you had to wind out and drop the leaves in. And I remember as a small boy, Annie, let me do the winding. And they kept putting these leaves in. And my father, who was Swiss by birth, and he had a very large, widespread family all over Europe. And he spoke about 10 or 12 languages. He offered his services once to the government during the war, but because he was an alien and although a neutral one, they couldn't accept him. And he had to register with the police. If you left London, he had to go and see the local police station and tell him he's going down to Tunbridge Wells, where my mother and my younger sister and myself were billeted. Evacuation.
Was that during the First World War?
No, second, yeah. Yeah, perhaps I should have put a few dates in there.
Could I ask you then? So, was he in business of some sort then? Did he run businesses or?
My father bought houses, did them up, and let them out. But he was such a good landlord. Most of the tenants were there 30, 40, 50 years, some 3-4 generations.
And was that in this area around Brockley as well?
Peckham. He owned 80 St Mary's Road, 90, and I think 98. I think was the other one. That's the way it was. But he had the house next door where I bought, of course. And then in the 30s, he built 7 garages at the bottom of the garden. And the garden was big enough for a double tennis court on the lawn. Because the local vicar, St Peter's Church, came and asked he could use it for a tennis court. And my father wasn't at all happy about that, because that lawn was his pride and joy. And later on during the war, when the bomb damaged it, the house was bombed, it partly burned the top floors, they dumped about 300 tonnes of timber on his lovely lawn. Good summer.
we can carry on.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, just as a quick aside, we don't need to worry about stopping and
no,
starting.
No, we don't.
We
no.
Just
no,
chop,
no,
oh, right, with this, just we chop it all out in the editing. Yeah, so you're doing great. That's
yeah very I mean, good.
The thing is that we'll let you try and keep going, yeah. So we'll nod, but we'll try not to say yes.
No.
Sorry, but don't be put off. And if you do run out of steam, don't worry about just going quiet.
That's unlikely.
Not a problem at all. No, I sense that. That's why we're here. I think we've come to the right place.
Yeah,
we
have.
So when I got to the age of five, I went to a private school in Chesilian Road. That's only about a couple of roads up from here. There was only about 12 pupils, and there's four teachers.
Is that the one that's now the nursery on the corner?
No, further down, on junction of Hillyfield Crescent and Chesilian Road, where about widens there, number 49. My life, all been nines and sevens, you know that? In Tunbridge Wells, we lived at number 7, Dow Street. I managed to rent a house, to live there.
Do you remember the name of the school that you went to?
Oh, yes, Hyley House. And the headmistress was, what was her name? No, I think you got me stumped there, man. I do know it, but you got me stumped there.
I'm sure it'll come to you.
I was there for 5 years. And then I went for the entrance examination at Colts Grammar School, which was then on Lewisham Hill, a beautiful big building, which got bombed during the war. But fortunately, we'd all 500 boys evacuated to Tunbridge Wells with their younger brothers and sisters.
And what year would that have been then? 1939 or 40?
39, yeah, just before the war started.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, about... war started in September the 3rd, 11 o'clock, and we went down there about roughly on my birthday, which would be 14, would it have been the 14? No, wait a minute. 26. Yeah, maybe about 13, though, about 13.
That's right, that makes sense.
I went to Tunbridge Wells. And we shared a school, the only school big enough, I think in Kent, to take 500 boys, was Skinner's School. That was in Tunbridge Wells, up on the main top road. And we went there in mornings, and the Skinner's boys went afternoon. And the following week, they did the opposite. And I was visited with a solicitor, 40 Royal Chase, Tunbridge Wells, beautiful road. All the knobs lived down there. And he had two children, a boy older than me and a boy younger. And I think I was chosen because I was five well spoken, you know. And,
So do you have any more, have you got any other recollections of your time here, though, as a younger boy, before the war broke out? Or is it really, is that too far?
Not really, no, it's a case of, how do I, my problem, I'm going to be what I call a continuity, where you get so far, and perhaps you jump a few years and not realise you've done it.
Mm. But that's okay. I mean,
I remember you were saying before we started recording, you were talking about the horses that delivered the milk, and you your dad was sort of saying, "You tell us a story about the fact that you like
Bill."
Yeah, that's it. Bill, milkman, and Bill the horse.
In those days, 31, 32, 33. The milkman called about 5 times a day. It came down at 4:30 in the morning, about 5:30, 6:45, about 4 or 5 times he called. The last time was about 9 on the way back to a depot.
Wow.
We having 3 staff and two children, my sister and myself. My younger sister wasn't born then. We got through quite a lot of grub, I tell you. And my mother, although she was quite well off, quite wealthy, she had a good eye for things. Now, the milkman in those days sold fruit. tin fruit in cut in cases. If you bought 56 tins of fruit, about a dozen of those would be free. Now, in the house next door, in the bedroom, they had very large French windows, and the windows had shutters that folded back into big cupboards. My mother filled those up before the war, over a period of time, and was still using that at the end of the war.
What, with the supplies that she picked up from the milkman?
No, nothing lean about it.
She just knew to buy in advance.
Yes. She knew, I mean, from common sense, if there's going to be a war, there's going to be rationing, a lot of things you like, you're not going to be able to get. It'd be illegal to deal on the black market. My parents would never do that, I'll tell you. No way. Mm. My father's the most honest man you ever met in your life.
And I suppose she had the experience of the First World War, because she would have lived through that.
I don't think so, no. Mm. No, I don't think so. I think Mum died back in the 50s. I think it's possible. No, she wouldn't be married then, because my dad came over here about 1890. My dad's quite a bit older than my mum. And he came over here from Switzerland. And if you go to the Old Bailey, up in the city, right opposite the Old Bailey, there was a restaurant called Devani's. That was my uncle.
All right.
And then down in Bournemouth, in Electric Square, another uncle had a restaurant and a hotel there.
So the hoteling and sort of in the business was in the family.
And the hotel in Airolo, that's my father's village, was named after President Motta, and he was the only man ever to be re-elected three times as president of Switzerland. And my family were interrelated. I think it's about my fifth uncle, or something, you know, quite many, many years. And the hotel is called Hotel Motta.
Wow. So was your mother, was she English or British?
Mum's Scots.
Scots.
No, my name is Scots. My mum was more Londoner, and my name was Scots, yeah. I love my nan. She's a lovely lady. I could do it. I could go down there, slide down the banisters, jump on the beds. I couldn't do it there next door.
And was she? But she did. She live in Scotland still then?
No. My grand lived in Park Street, Greenwich. Her husband was in the First World War, my granddad, and he came back after being guest in the war. And when he died, soon after the war was over, my nan got sixpence a week pension.
Did your grandfather ever talk to you about what he experienced?
I never knew him. He died about 1917, 1980, just after the war. He was a guest, and he died a terrible death. And my nan, she was a tough old bird, went out chowing. Wouldn't take any charity. My mother couldn't give her 10p.
So where did, if it's not too impolite a question, how did your parents meet, or whereabouts did they meet?
I don't quite know, to be honest. I don't know. That's a strange thing. I never ever thought about that. It's one of those things you don't always think of, do you?
Well, you don't really think about your parents being single, because they're your mum and dad.
No, that's it.
I once worked on a project with some children, and it was actually to get them to go onto a website to encourage kids that needed to do a bit of reading. And what they had to do is they had to sign up to this website. Mm. And they put as one of the questions, which works for adults, but it just blew the minds of kids.
Oh, yeah.
What is your mother's maiden name?
No.
I know that. Do you know what I mean? It was just, so I had to feedback and say, don't put that as a question.
You own a bank account, often grandmother's name, very often. Mm. Or my maiden name, my mother. Mm. Yeah, my grandname is Crompton.
Always good that you know that, yeah.
Crompton,
I know some, I know, a girlfriend of mine that I was at college with, nearly 30 years ago. Her family was Scottish. They were Cromptons.
Yeah, it's quite a common name right there. Mm. And she lived in Park Street, Greenwich.
This is your grandmother.
My grand, and right opposite the bars, public bars. And she used to go in there once a week for 3p and have a bath. A bath for the water, a towel, soap, all for 3p. had no bath, outside toilet.
She had no bath at her place. No, I'm sure like didn't lots didn't of
have
places.
Bath. No, I would say, of this part of the world, 60% didn't have a bath.
Well, and that's so, and so everybody would use the public
bath. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's got facilities, you know. Mm. Three or four people. I mean, it's not exactly a fortune. Even the poor people could afford that.
So what about the facilities in the house that you grew up with? I mean, you mentioned that, you know, you had a cook and a char lady. Tell us a little bit about what facilities were in the house that you were brought up in.
Well, yeah. I think we had a dining room, drawing room, conservatory. Every now and again, my father went mad and changed things. And I, as a small boy, to sell him off. Because you keep going to the wrong room, you go in there. No, that's not the library anymore. Oh, God. It was a good life.
Is this the house? Is this house still? Is this still the same structure standing at that address, or has it changed?
Oh no! It's farther now. It's four flats.
But it's still the old. Is it still the Victorian original building?
Oh
there?
Yeah. Oh, right. And I was out washing my car one day out in the road here by the bus stop, and a fella came around the corner with two dogs, and that's amazing with dogs and cats. They know whether you like them or not, and they come straight over to me. And sat down and gave me a paw. I'd never seen him before. I showed him, talked to him. I said, you knew then, yeah? He said, no, I've been here quite some time. I live at 49. Oh, that's my old home. When did you last in there? Oh, 50, 60 years ago. Would you like to go in? Oh, I said, I'd love to. So we went down there and they went in and met his wife and because of two dogs. And I told him a lot about the house he didn't know. There was a dumb waiter.
Mm.
What's a dumb waiter?
Well, it's one of those lifts, isn't it, for the food.
And I had to get in there, I was a small boy. And then go down the kitchen, and cook in the kitchen downstairs, and Mum would blow up. Hello, morning, Mum. Morning, Mum. Morning. Breakfast, yes, please. I won't have any tomatoes today. Well, that was it, you know. And when it was ready, I climbed in there. And when it got up top there, I pushed the door open. Boom. My mum didn't have to do that.
So you never got trapped in there or anything like that?
It's about 4 foot wide, about 3 foot deep and about 3 foot high. I'm only a small boy, remember? Mm. And you just pulled a rope.
Mm.
So is that how each meal used to be brought to the dining room?
Yeah.
Gosh, that is quite a grand existence then.
And I mean, and in my house, in my cellar here, I think it's pulled out a few months ago. There was all the wires for the bells.
Mm.
No bedroom, kitchen, that sort of thing. And you in bed there, you think, oh, I do fancy a cup of tea. Format. Morning, hello, yeah. Tea, please, Annie. Right, coming up.
And that was in the old house, that's or right, in this house?
Yeah.
I know it was a grand, considered, like you say, you were saying earlier, that how it was the Park Lane, was it, of South London?
It was, yes.
Because wasn't it that one of the houses down that bottom end, that somebody was saying that they thought the king used to visit a woman admirer of his, lived in one of these houses.
There's quite a few celebrities that live in this road. I don't, because my life been broken up in a war and evacuation and soldiering and that sort of thing. I have a lot of breaks in my life, which you lose some of the continuity of it. But there's a house down the road on the bridge, number 25 and a half. Not my money on this, because people say cobblers and rubbish. No. On the bridge there, the house there, they extended the house, instead of being 25A, B or C, 25 and a half. Right on the bridge.
Can you tell us a little bit about the occupants that lived there? Did you know anyone?
No, I didn't actually, not really. I had a very busy life as a young child. You know, I was in the Scouts, Cubs.
Were they local? Was that a local troop here?
That wouldn't be. St. Peter's Church.
Oh, yeah.
The house outside the road was the vicarage, the red house.
Oh, the big one on the corner now. Yeah.
Some stained glass windows are still there.
And was that where they ran the Scouts there, or actually?
No, that was the vicarage. The Scouts were in St. Peter's Hall.
Which is the one that's now the Indian.
That's right. Yeah,
the
yeah,
Indian
yeah,
ca-
yeah,
the
yeah.
They're and not. Which is, that hall is apparently where Spike Milligan first performed.
Really?
It was the Scout Hall, it was the Girl Guides. You know, I went through a lot of the Cubs, Scouts. What was it? What was the Air Force one? Air Cadets? No, not Air Cadets. Oh, dear. That was the corner of Jeffrey Road, big house in the corner.
Not
about.
The Boys Brigade, or the...
No. It was the Air Force.
It was Cadets, wasn't it? Well, that's what it was called recently.
I can't remember the actual name now. But you joined that with the intent of becoming a member of the Air Force. Then they found out that I had some difficulty in recognising merit. And that no Spitfire pilot than me. So I said, so I stuff him, but I joined the army.
But that was because, you had a problem with the colour red?
I see red, I recognise red, but when you get some shades of red, you've got to be very spot on, because apparently when you're flying a fighter plane, you've got about 99 parts of a second to do something on seeing red. Mm. It wouldn't be a good idea, so I shut down on that.
I wouldn't mind taking you back to the wonderful comment you made when you were describing the area, because you were sort of saying how this area, this street, I think you were saying this area or the street used to be really posh, and it was the equivalent of...
Park Lane.
Yeah.
It was known as Park Lane.
Talk to us about that.
If you went up to the West End and bought a very small article and asked, do you do delivers? Where do you live, madam? At Wickham Road, Broccoli. They deliver a reel of cotton.
Really?
And if you were a bit of a scruffy-looking individual, or black, or any other colour, or that, you wouldn't get in Wickham Road. You'd get about 10 doors up, and someone may quietly tell you to push off.
Right. Well, even just walking through the neighbourhood. Right. So the deliveries from the West End, it was just to that address because they knew they were wealthy customers.
Oh, yeah.
But why the cotton? What was the significance of the cotton?
Well, so my new thing, a reel of cotton was about a farthing in those days.
But it was one of the few addresses in South London that they would be prepared
to sewing machine over there.
Something small.
That is, right. That sewing machine over there is a Treadle sewing machine. I've still got the handbook. I've still got the instruction book.
Is that the family sewing machine then?
Yeah, yeah. During the war, you could buy remnants. See, you couldn't buy clothing, that's it, or sheet, or thing, you had to have coupons. But the factory turned out blankets, all strips left over, they were there to sell those as remnants. Mm. And I used to get blue ribbon and make blankets out of them. I was sitting there, see them peddle away like bloody mad, and we make blankets.
And to sell, or just to
pass on to friends? No, for family, yes.
Wow.
When coupons are very, very, very valuable. And the coupons, everything.
Yeah, well, during the war.
Oh, yeah.
So what kind of, who were your neighbours then when you were growing up? Who lived on in the other houses who lived in the other?
The only one I know was this house, really. Opposite, at 68, was Dr. Riddle. He was our doctor. No National Service.
And was that where, did he have a practice there?
Oh yeah, right opposite, 68. Now, my mum needed him, and he'd go to the window, and she'd wave her tea towels on it, and 10 minutes the doctor came over.
So what Andy. Type of people kind of lived in the area?
Most people were management. People who owned businesses, or people who created businesses. It's all money. There's a lot of money involved.
Do you remember when the first, you were saying black people didn't move in the area or live on the street. Do you remember when you started seeing those changes and different types of people moved in?
I think basically when I went to school, but there were no black boys at Colts. Not that I remember. There were 500 boys there.
I mean, most of that would have probably happened after the Windrush thing in the late 50s, when I think that was when the first real number. I mean, there were people from all over, presumably had arrived in the UK, like sailors and so on. You hear that there were little populations in Liverpool.
I've never had any hang-ups about race or religion or gay, so I mean, well, half the people who play bowls are gay, some of the older ones. Mm. None of my business. Mm. They're quite polite to me. I enjoy a game with them. I like their company.
Yeah.
And I get invited about everything in it.
Hmm. No, but just the lawn. I mean, it was one of those sorts of changes in some. Well,
I was brought up. My father was a great good father. When I was quite young, I actually remember this. When I was quite young, I suppose 4, 5, 6. No, it's my mother. She said, "Arthur, remember, our servants are not there to wait on you. They're there to look after, dad and I." And of course, I said, "Keep an eye on you." Of course, naturally, and when we entertained, we did a lot of entertaining. They would double up and all sorts of in place to give an appearance. Hmm. I mean, that front room, we had a chandelier in the centre room. The ceiling was about 12 foot high. We had a sideboard there, and the mirror on the sideboard was 12 foot, no, wait a minute, 8 foot by about 6, the mirror.
You have to keep them busy then.
We had two large 3-piece suites in that room. He didn't notice them. Two of them. One's a 4-seater, one's a 3-seater, and about 4 armchairs. And this table would seat 25 people at Christmas.
So do you have any memories of the big Christmas gatherings?
Oh, yeah. The only I never liked, because my father had been Swiss, he invited, a lot of his family, because we're, Yugoslav and Czech and Polish and German and all Italian, especially Italian and Swiss. And they come over and they look at me and they all laugh, lots of laughing and Bambino, ha 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 ha. And I my dad said, "Don't do that, you get annoyed, you'll be in trouble." they were lovely times, they really were.
And I think that was also, when I was here last time, could you talk us through that lovely photograph of the house that you've got?
Oh, yeah. I was at school when it happened. There's a man walking down the middle of the road, right down the middle of the road. Photos, 6 months at a time. And Mama said to Nan, "Call him over." And you paid him, and he brought the photograph back following me. That's how trusting people were in those days. You wouldn't do it today, would you?
No.
No way. And he came back, and that's added to the original photograph, taken in 1926.
Which we've got, which you have still got, haven't
still
you?
Got,
if we're lucky.
When I got a picture of me in the back garden next door, I was about 5, with our Airedale, an Airedale dog. Oh, dear.
What other photos do you have? What other photos do you have of the local, you in the local area and the local area?
I don't think a lot, really, because they were very disturbing years, in so much that although it's very nice from young age up to about 10 and that, and then the threat of war and relations coming over there from Germany because they were Jewish or whatever, and my father put them up a lot of these places, my dad, a good dad, very good for people. My dad still went to Switzerland every year, all through the war.
Which was, Switzerland was neutral, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, but he had to go out into the Atlantic. So 100 miles out to Atlantic and come back into Madrid. Then get a plane through to Switzerland. And then on the funicular. And they were up there about 10, 20,000 feet above sea level.
Back to his village or home and family, right, and sort of business contacts and so on. But just to go back to you saying then, so even as a child of approximately 9 or 10 years old, you picked up on that sense of worry the kind of international relations were taking.
My mother, she worried about a cousin or something like that in Germany, and then they came over and they came to stay with us for a few weeks, and then Dad picked him up somewhere in one of his houses. And he looked after him, And then during the war, you weren't allowed to take money out. Even after the war, you weren't allowed to take money out of the country. Mm. You couldn't take any money out. So my father went to Switzerland with a small suitcase. You think he's only going to have it for the night. He's going to the 3 months. And everything they pay for. Now what's all this now? What happened there, I wonder? I'm not very good with mobile phones, actually. I was in the Festival on Keys.
Can we help at all, or are you...
No, I'll get there eventually.
That's very good.
Opening message. Who is that now? Oh, that was my fellow. I take two bowls. He lives down the road.
Oh, that's right. I remember you telling me.
I take him down there, and because he hadn't got a car, and he never played ball before, and I introduced him to bowls, and now he's getting quite good.
Is he all right?
Oh, yeah.
He's not sent you a...
No, just he's got some friends in, and probably likes to drink too much, gets himself in bloody trouble. But that, I know for what to do. I try to steer in the right direction, but it's no relation.
Young man is
about 40. A lot younger than myself. But we got on pretty well together,
no? No, I imagine.
He's actually been in my house, so he's quite honoured, I tell you.
Well, as are we, to be in here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's okay, you know.
And do you think that's what keeps you young, having young friends?
Well, I never, unless people mention it, I never sort of think of being old. Then I get think, oh, I got to bend down something, I think, ooh, ah. Because I do go to hospital quite a lot. And twice a day I have to take 10, 12 tablets, whatever, and all sorts of inhalers. And, but, you know, you get used to it. And I actually name all my tablets.
I mean, you told me before.
That was quite an eye-opener for some of the doctors in the hospital. The nurse brought me over some tablets. I said, they're not mine. She said, what do you mean they're not yours? I said, they're not mine. There's no clotapol there. There's no lamprazole. There's no oxybutin. There's no allow. That's the chewing tablets. When I first saw them tablets, I thought, you're joking. So you don't bloody eat, swallow them. You have to chew them.
What, because they're so large?
Yeah. I could see the pharmacist. I've been going there a long time. There were a lot of laughs down there. I want some special tablets. Oh, my God, because a lot of people in there usually and all listening naturally, so, you know. They're the ones that make you go, ooh, ooh, ooh. I don't know, I've heard of those. Yeah, I think they're a branch of, and I'll name one or two tablets. I don't know when you mix those, mate. You'd be in bloody trouble, I do.
When you say you name your tablets, what kind of names do you give them?
I know the names of them.
Oh, you
know
the
just
names?
No, he just means he knows the names of all the names of all the pharmacies.
I can name up to about 18 different tablets.
And it's quite impressive. Well, there's just and, about half a dozen there. I mean.
When the nurse, I corrected her and said, they're not my tablets, she brought a junior doctor up. And she came back with a senior doctor. He said, well, I've been working here 36 years. I've never met anybody, a patient, who knew all the tablets. Every fortnight, I put about 250 tablets on my draining board out there and put them into pill boxes. You know, pill boxes, 7 days, you know. And I do it from memory. But if you've been doing it that long, you get it right there. And that top one there is oxybutin, carbocysteine, LL, and nitro... Fulitane, that's in the top one. Next one is clotapol, lansoprazole, fistatin and statin. And go right down to the bottom like that. And the same with all the inhalers, three inhalers. I've got my own nebulizer there.
I mean, no, I think it doesn't surprise me that in the hospitals they don't encounter that very often, because often, you know, well, just most people wouldn't be sufficiently interested or kind of keen to sort of have analysed. So it's a sign of an active mind.
I want to know what I'm taking. Sometimes I go ask my doctor. I say, why have you increased this clotapol? Well, they'd help to thin the blood and so on. And for what purpose? I want to know. And I know as much about, but I probably know more about my body than she does. I've got a hernia. If that strangulates, I'm dead. I have an enlarged prostate. If that withdrawal, I'm dead. Because I can't take any anaesthetic. I can't take any, anaesthetics, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or anaesthetics or painkillers?
No, I'm taking painkillers. But I can't take anything to put me to sleep.
Oh, yeah, and an anaesthetic, yeah. So they wouldn't want to operate on you because you.
And then I had the time when my consultant rang me up for a chat. You heard of a consultant ringing up a patient for a chat? So I said, he started off with a bit, I picked the phone up. He said, "Is that Arthur?" I said, "Depends who's ringing." So I had a chuckle on the other end. He said, "Well, I'd like to come out and have a chat." I said, "When?" "No, not tomorrow. I'm playing bowls tomorrow." "No. Friday." So I went up Friday. And the waiting room was like a tube train. It was packed. I had a job of getting up to a desk. I eventually got there. I said, "Mr. Cadotti," I said, "go straight in." So I went in. And he said, "Don't go away." He said, "That's your medical report there." So off he went, and I not my memory. It's up on the top in the red ink. It says, "This patient is stupidly independent." So he came and said, "Were you offended?" I said, "No." I was quite amused.
But you say stupidly independent.
Yeah, yeah.
Bizarre expression.
Well, I'm stupid to a case of being over the top.
Hmm.
I value my independence more than my life.
Hmm.
The main thing is that you're not offended.
No, so no. I've never in my life worried about dying. Mm. I used to worry about dementia. And when I thought, hang on, I started reading up on it. And you don't know you've got it. So why worry about it?
Well, that's a fair point, you know.
I mean, you worry about dementia, then you've got it, you're on another world, aren't you? And you don't know you've got dementia, just these other people are a bit funny, you know, a bit weird. But you don't know you've got dementia, don't you?
Mm.